Our beloved master, Yakuzan asked a monk, "Where do you come from?" "From Nansen," was the reply. "How long were you there?" Yakuzan continued. "From last winter to summer," replied the monk. "Then you must have become a good ox," commented Yakuzan. The monk said, "The thing is, I was there, but I didn't even go to the dining hall." "But you cannot get by just through breathing the wind," Yakuzan commented. "It was not that bad, Osho," said the monk. "There is surely a man who will hold a spoon for me." On another occasion, Yakuzan was returning to his temple with a bundle of firewood when a monk asked him, "Where have you been?" Yakuzan replied, "I've got firewood." The monk pointed to Yakuzan's sword and said, "It makes the sound tap tap. What in the world is it?" At this, the master unsheathed the sword and assumed a warrior's stance.
Friends, there is a group of Soviet comrades here present today. They have few very beautiful and simple questions. First, I am going to answer them. The first question: you have dedicated a book to Gorbachev. Since you are against politicians, is this a contradiction? Not at all. Because Gorbachev is not a politician. His every act proves it, that he is a man in politics but not a politician. My dedication to Gorbachev, an academic, scientist, Zakharov, was for this simple reason, that he is not a politician and is interested immensely for peace in the world, for friendship in the world, not for war. The politician's mind is always concerned with war. Adolf Hitler, in his autobiography, "My Struggle," says that if a politician wants to remain in politics, he has to continue creating enemies. If they are not real enemies, create fictions that somebody is going to attack you, that you are surrounded by enemies. Only that will keep you in power, not peace. And it is a factual thing to know that your whole history is filled with the heroes who were nothing but warmongers, people who massacred millions of people. Your history does not consist of a single name who was a peacemaker. I have dedicated my book with deep love to Gorbachev and Zakharov, because they both are working for a world peace. That is not the way of the politician. That is the way of a humanitarian. That is the way who loves humanity, who loves this beautiful planet and wants to save it at any cost. And all his actions prove what I am saying. Their second question is, as a religious leader, you are above human herds, but do you criticize America and Christianity so much because you feel hurt? In the first place, I am not a religious leader. I am a religious man. A leader is fundamentally a politician. Whether his politics is hidden behind religion, it does not matter. The very word leader comes through politics. I don't have any followers here. These are all my friends. So please, don't call me a religious leader. I'm just religious. Secondly, I'm not criticizing America and Christianity because they have almost tried to destroy my body. That does not matter to me. It does not hurt to me because I know something which is indestructible. No poison, no bombs, no nuclear weapons can destroy it. My being, my spirituality is beyond any destruction. It is eternal and immortal. So it is not a question of hurting me. My criticism of America and Christianity is nothing to do with my personal attitude. I am against all religions, not only Christianity. I am against God because I am against all fictions. I am against hell and against heaven because I don't want to create in humanity a schizophrenia. I don't want human beings to live under fear of hell and the greed of heaven. And I don't want people to have any kind of belief system, whether it is Christianity or Hinduism or Buddhism, it does not matter. To me, any organized religion, and Christianity is the most organized religion in the world, is a danger to human beings. Their individuality, their freedom, their dignity is destroyed. Jesus goes on saying to people, you are sheep and I am the sheeper. That is the attitude of all so-called religions. You don't know, I know. And you have simply to believe in me. And all your sins will be forgiven. Just believing in Jesus or in Krishna or in Buddha cannot erase anybody's crimes and sins. Every action has its reaction. If you have done something wrong, you will have some bitter experiences following it. If you are doing something good, you will have flowers showering on you, a deep peace, a deep silence, and a growth of your inner consciousness. I have criticized America because I have been there for 5 years and saw with my own eyes that this is the most hypocrite country in the world. Talking about democracy, talking about freedom, talking about freedom of speech, and nothing exists there. They were against me because they could not follow their own constitution about freedom of speech. They had no argument against me. Naturally, they became absolutely mad. How to destroy me, how to destroy the commune. The commune was a far superior version of communism. No dictatorship, no money. In the commune there was no need for money. People donated to the commune. But as far as their needs were concerned, the commune was responsible to fulfill their needs. And the commune was living in a far better, higher standard than any American. The richest American was jealous of the commune. The commune was amidst a capitalist world. And when they deported me, the Attorney General of America, Ed Meese, accepted it in a press conference that I have not committed any crime. The reason to deport me was we wanted to destroy the commune. That was our priority. But without deporting me, it was impossible to destroy the commune. But why? Why you wanted to destroy the commune? Commune was not at all concerned with America. The commune was located in a desert, 126 square miles desert, which was for sale for 40 years and nobody purchased it at any price. Because what you will do with a desert? But my people converted the desert in an oasis. That hurt America very much. And my people were living with such joy, such laughter, and they were working hard. All their needs were fulfilled. They have the whole commune centrally air conditioned. They had everything that they wanted. And there was no exchange of money in the commune. This made them completely mad. They arrested me without any arrest warrant, without showing me any cause for what they are arresting me. Just a piece of paper in which there were few names that we have been ordered from above, that these people should be immediately arrested. I said, but you should look at our passports. My name is not on this paper, neither the 6 people who were with me, their name is on this paper. You are absolutely absurd. Just watch our passports and compare with your names, you are arresting wrong people. Still we were arrested. In fact, they had no evidence at all to arrest me. But they did not give me a bail for 12 days. They arrested me in North Carolina, and the flight from North Carolina to Oregon, where the commune was located, was only 5 hours. They took 12 days for me to reach to Portland, and they dragged me from jail to jail. In 12 days, I have been dragged to 6 jails. Only later on I became aware of it when the British experts in poisoning looked into my symptoms and gave the verdict that I had been given a certain poison, thallium, which is not detectable either from blood or from urine. It simply disappears. That is the only poison, and I had all the symptoms. When the poison disappears, it leaves certain kinds of sicknesses in the body, and this has been used against political prisoners. But if you give in a bigger dose, the person dies immediately. That's why they wanted 12 days to give me in small doses so I don't die in their jails. They will be condemned by the whole world. And when they released me, I was ordered to leave America immediately, within 15 minutes. My car was before the court, and my jet plane was kept running on engine on the airport. I should leave immediately, being afraid that if I live one day more, I may appeal to the Supreme Court. And there was every reason for me to win the case, because none of their charges, 34 crimes for a man who was in silence, has never moved out of his house, how he can commit 34 crimes? And they had no evidence for any crime. When I saw democracy, American style at work, it was absolute nonsense to talk about democracy. Their constitution is just a showpiece to the world. The country consists of criminals. Talking about freedom, when I raised the question that you are all foreigners, all Americans are foreigners in America, it belongs to the Red Indians, whom you have killed, whom you have forced into deep forests you call reservation camps. In fact, they are the same concentration camps as Adolf Hitler. And you are occupying the land of somebody else, and you talk about freedom. Looking at American crime, when I moved through 6 jails, I could not believe my eyes. Every jail has at least 600, 700 criminals. All were black. Not a single white man I came across in 6 jails. It seems only black people commit crime. And these black people are all young people. America is very much afraid of a black revolution. So all these young people have been forced into jail without any trial. Whenever I reached in a jail, the prisoners shouted to me because they have been seeing my face on the television continuously. They were rejoiced to see me and they said, "You will be going out of jail soon." The whole world is alerted by your arrest. Thousands of telegrams from the most prominent people around the world, painters, poets, actors, film producers, mystics, Nobel Prize winners. In the first jail, so many telegrams came that the jailer came to me that we don't have a space for so many telegrams and we don't have a space for so many flowers and we don't have enough personnel to receive all the telephones that are coming from all over the world. What do you suppose? What should we do? I said, it is your problem. Why you have arrested me? Because they were afraid of my death, that may create great opposition around the world, particularly in the intellectuals, intelligentsia, artists, all kinds of creative people will be opposed to it. They gave me in slow doses. And still they were afraid that perhaps those small doses are not going to kill me. So at last they have put a bomb under my chair. It is by the courtesy of the bomb that I am alive. It did not go off at the right time. I had left the chair. I heard it on the airport from the journalist that the bomb did not go off. Something went wrong. I am not against American people. I love them as I love all the people of the earth. And I have received much love from the American population. But I am absolutely against the American politicians and the American bureaucracy. It is absolutely against humanity. It is suicidal, murderous. It is preparing to destroy this world. Every day, more and more nuclear weapons are gathering. They have spent trillions of dollars on nuclear weapons. And Ronald Reagan has left the place of the president, but he has given a budget of $1.5 trillion to create more nuclear weapons. Now George Bush is at a loss from where to get this money. My criticism of American politicians is based not my personal hurts. They don't matter. At least to me, they don't matter. But I am certainly hurt because of American anti-human attitudes. There are 3 million street people in this winter. They are dying in thousands. And America goes on sending aid to poor countries, and it cannot save its own poor. Karl Marx has never an idea that communism will happen into Soviet Union. His idea was that communism will happen first in America, where exploitation of the poor has reached to its climax. Russia was a poor country with a small group of rich people, the Tsar and few other rich people. The whole country was poor. There was not yet a class distinction. It was a feudal country. It has not yet become capitalist. According to Karl Marx's analysis, only a capitalist country can move towards communism. A feudal country first has to become capitalist. Capitalism means a clear-cut division of the poor and the rich, and the middle class simply disappears. Few move into the rich, most of them fall back into the poor. When one country is divided clearly in the poor and the rich, revolution is possible. Russia was not in such a position. It was a feudal country. The Tsar was a feudal lord. But existence does not work according to logic. It was a certain situation that made Russia communist. The situation was the First World War. Tsar's own soldiers were not having sufficient clothes, boots, food. They turned against Tsar, his own army. And it was a great strategy of Lenin to ride on the wave. It was not really a conflict between the poor and the rich. It was a conflict between the Tsar and his own armies. And Lenin took the opportunity. He rushed back. He was in Germany. He rushed back immediately, and he was a man of immense clarity. He immediately rode on the wave of the armies, and when Tsar has no armies, his own armies were against him. Communism happened as an accident in Russia. It was not according to the economic analysis by Karl Marx. But whatever the cause, it happened. It is the first communist country in the world, the only hope. And I am not against only Christianity. I am against all religions except Zen, because Zen is not a religion but only religiousness. And I have to make it clear to you that religion is a doctrine, an organized church, a belief system, a fictitious god, heaven and hell, and a great priesthood which functions as a mediator between you and God. and exploits you in the name of religion, in the name of God. Zen is the only religious phenomenon in the world which has no doctrine, no scripture, which has no God, no belief system, no organized church. It is an individual phenomenon, just like love. You don't have a church of love. You don't have a political party for love. It is an individual freedom. Just as love is individual, so is meditation. And to me, religion only means one thing: meditation. Going inwards and exploring your consciousness. Just the way science explores matter, meditation is the science of the inner. It explores consciousness. I have my points of agreement with Karl Marx, with Engels, with Lenin, with Gorbachev. I have my points of disagreement. Karl Marx and Engels were aware only of two religions, Judaism and Christianity, which are both just so-so religions. Karl Marx and Engels were not aware of Zen. They were not aware of Tao. They were not aware of meditation. It is not their fault. Their whole concern was how to make society economically equal. So they said the man is only matter, and the consciousness is a byproduct of matter. So when the man dies, the consciousness also dies. On that point, I am in absolute disagreement. I am against all religions because they have been exploiting humanity, and they are exactly what Karl Marx called the opium of the people. They are giving the poor consolation that your poverty is a fire test. Just listen to the words of Jesus. He says, "Blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the earth." If blessed are the poor, then there is no need to remove poverty. In fact, make more poor people so they can become more blessed people and can inherit the kingdom of God. Spread poverty. Breed like animals as many children as you can. These all will be the inheritors of God's kingdom. Such consolation has been given by all religions in different ways. The Bible says, don't change anything because God has made it so and He is wiser than you. So don't change any structure of the society. Don't change family. But God never made family. In fact, God is the greatest lie in existence. And from one central lie, thousands of lies go on growing. I am against not only Christianity, I am against Hinduism, I am against Buddhism, I am against Mohammedanism, because they are functioning in the same way, their names are different. It is not that Christianity has hurt me that I am against it. Judaism has not hurt me. Mohammedanism has not hurt me. Buddhism has not hurt me. But I am against on principle that these are the people who have been exploiting humanity and protecting the vested interests. Hinduism says that you are poor because of your past life's bad actions, and you are rich because of your past life's good actions. They distract the mind from the reality. The reality is that you are poor because you are being exploited by the rich continuously. You are sucked. Your blood is continuously being taken out of you. Your very life is at the minimum, so that you can function as a slave. You are allowed to live, because without you, who is going to create a vast army of slaves? And all religions are in favor of the rich, because the rich are donating to the churches, to the temples, to the religions, a small part, not even 1% of their exploitation. But they keep the priest rich, comfortable, because the priests are protecting the status quo. I am against the status quo. I want to change the whole society, its structure. I want a classless society, a world without boundaries, without nations, a world one, neither black nor white, neither Indian nor Russian nor American. This small planet can live in peace. In 3,000 years, the politicians have dragged humanity into 5,000 wars. But you will be surprised. Even in 5,000 wars, politicians have not been able to kill more people than religions have killed. They have their religious wars, crusades, jihad. Jesus says, whoever is not with me is against me. Now this is a word of a politician, not a word of a religious man, not a word of a man who is meditative, who can see things. The person who is not with me may be just different, indifferent. It is not necessary that he should be against me. And the person who is with me can be against me any day, and the person who is against me can be in favor with me any day. And there is a third category which Jesus completely forgets, the indifferent, the agnostic, who is neither theist nor atheist, who does not believe in any ism, who simply wants to inquire into truth. I am against Christianity and other religions because they are preventing people from finding out the truth of their own being. To me, religiousness is acceptable. It is a quality which brings grace to you, which brings blissfulness to you, which brings a silence to your mind, which brings an encounter with your original being, it is absolutely a science. Science of the inner space. Just as there is a science of objective world. But it is not a belief system. You don't have to believe in any savior, in any messiah, in any prophet, in any reincarnation of God. These are all arch-egoists who are pretending to save you. Their third question is, you once said in a discourse that Lalin was against marriage and wanted to dissolve the family. In reality, Lalin always followed angels in saying that the family is the nucleus. Nucleus of what? Nucleus of the capitalist society. Both Marx and Engels, in their analysis of the economic structure, are very clear about it, that family came into being only with private property. Before private property, there was no family. Hence, it logically follows, if private property is dissolved, marriage will automatically be dissolved. It is a logical conclusion. Whether Lalin agrees with it or not does not matter. I don't care about anybody. I care about intelligence. It is not a question whether Engels contradicts himself. Family has been the nucleus of all the organized religions. It has been the nucleus of all the feudal capitalist societies. It has been the nucleus of all exploitation, war. That nucleus has to be completely withdrawn. Without family dying out, you cannot have a real humanity arising individuals. I have not said that Lalin was against marriage. I have said it is a logical conclusion from Marx and Engels' analysis of society. They say that family came into being with private property. Why it came into being with private property? Because every father wanted his property to be inherited by his son. Hence, he has to guard his wife that she does not get pregnant with somebody else. So family became an imprisonment of the woman, so that the child is certainly the son of the father. The father has no other evidence. Only the mother knows exactly to whom the child belongs. So keep the mother completely out of society. No education, no economic freedom, no financial status. In Mohammedan countries, she cannot even show her face to anybody. Keep the woman completely imprisoned. That is the only security that your son is your son. And your property that you have gathered will be inherited by your son. But in a communist society, when the property is not private, there is no need for any family to protect. The property belongs to everyone. Then why bother about that my son has to be my son? In fact, I had said that it was the logical conclusion. I have read all the communist literature that has been published from Marx, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, and I have read all the literature that has been published against communism. I would like my Soviet comrades to look at my library, and they will find all communist literature there, and all anti-communist literature there. It is my understanding that marriage cannot exist in a communist society. A commune will take place of the marriage. And I have read somewhere, because for 15 years I have not been reading at all. I have read somewhere that in the beginning, when the revolution happened in 1917 in Russia, in the beginning, they had tried for 3, 4, or 5 years to dissolve marriage, to dissolve family, but they found it very difficult. It is one of the most ancient unit emotionally, sentimentally, psychologically. It is very difficult to dissolve it. It was difficult to dissolve property and make it public. Stalin has to kill at least 1 million Russians just to make a classless society possible. They found it is difficult, and it can be taken care of later on when communism becomes more established. Don't take too many problems. The whole world was against Russia. When it went into through revolution, the whole world was communist. Wanted to destroy communism. If communism succeeds, that is a danger for other nations. Then the poor will start rising in other nations and asking for the same equality. After 5 years of failure, they could not dissolve. But my understanding is, they could not dissolve the family unit because they have betrayed Karl Marx and Engels themselves. Soviet Union has become another class society. The bureaucrats have become a class, and the non-bureaucrats, the public. So the bureaucrats, who are the communists, have replaced the capitalists. Soviet Union is still not classless. It has created a new class friction. Because it is not classless, it could not dissolve the family. Otherwise, there was no problem to dissolve the family and marriage. Now, the family has become nucleus of communism, which is a contradiction. I follow my own intelligence, and my conclusions don't have to be in agreement with anybody. But anybody who is intelligent enough can see the problem. Their fourth question is, what would you do if you went to the Soviet Union? A revolution. It has been too long that Soviet Union has seen revolution. of course, my revolution will be of spirituality. I want Soviet Union to add something more to its dignity, meditation. Just economic equality is not enough. A spiritual equality. Just being a body is so poor that I want Soviet Union to become richer. Not only richer in objects, but richer in consciousness, in enlightenment. I want Soviet Union also to have awakened people like Gautam Buddha, or Lao Tzu, or Chuang Tzu. I would like to introduce Zen to the Soviet Union. That is my revolution. One of the most famous spiritualists of Europe, Francis Israel Rigardi, a famous occult magician who was regarded as a great magus and scholar of the Golden Dawn Society, stated just prior to his death, "If I were to choose in what form I would come back in terms of reincarnation, I would like to continue the great work until I become a Rajneesh." Just today I received the book, and I could not believe what kind of spiritualist this fellow Francis Israel Rigardi was. A spiritualist, in the first place, knows he is not going to be born again. If he has not come to that point, he has no right to call himself a spiritualist. A person who has known his spirituality has no need to come back to any body, into any reincarnation. This imprisonment in the body is only up to the point you become a Buddha. When you become a Buddha, you have learned everything that life could teach you. And you have not only learned the outside world, you have learned your inner world also. Now there is nothing left. What happens to a Gautam Buddha? He simply dissolves into the universal life, into the eternal life. He does not come back to the earth in a body. This man, Francis Israel Rigardi, knows nothing of spirituality. But in the West, it is very easy to befool people. Because the West has no understanding of the inner world. So any idiot can manage to deceive them. Occultism, esotericism, spiritualism, just big words, without any experience supporting them. Because if this man was really spiritual, he would not, at the point of death, he wants a reincarnation, but he has a condition also. "I would like to continue the work until I become a Rajneesh." I was alive, he was alive, he could have come here. Rather than having the courage and guts to come here, he is thinking of becoming a Rajneesh after death if there is a reincarnation. That is a big if. he could have come here. Thousands of people come and go every day, and 10,000 people remain continuously around me, and I am not a leader, and I am not a priest, and I am not teaching any philosophy or any doctrine. I am simply helping them to enter inwards. How to turn your eyes inwards so you can see yourself? Once you have seen it, you are the Buddha. Then there is no birth, no death. You have gone beyond the circle of birth and death. This is the only spirituality, the only religiousness that I would like to teach to my Soviet friends. I have already in Soviet Union at least 300 sannyasins underground. Because I was in America, so the KGB was continuously thinking that I am an American agent. They were harassing my people in Soviet Union. They burned my books. They took away all the books. And my people were meeting into undergrounds, writing and typing my books. I would like from my comrades here that help my people. I am not against communism. I am a far bigger communist than you have known ever. Because I am a spiritualist communist. Marx and Engels are all out of date. Soviet Union needs a new revolution, a spiritual revolution. And I think Gorbachev is doing a great mistake in allowing the old priests back in the name of opening the doors of Soviet Union. Perhaps he does not understand that these old priests, Catholic and Protestant, are old Russian Orthodox. They belonged to a certain society. They belong to a communist or feudal society. They cannot belong to a communist society. Opening the doors of Russia is beautiful, but open the doors for science, open the doors for art, open the doors for meditation, but that does not mean that you have to open the doors to all kinds of diseases. Christianity is a disease. And if you open the doors for Pope, you are going against Karl Marx, you are going against communism. You don't understand the implications. These are the people who are real agents of capitalism. They are against any revolution. You can see it in India. In India, for 5,000 years, as long as history can approach, India is far ancient than 5,000 years. But for 5,000 years, we have not known anything like revolution against the social structure. And India is one of the poorest countries. But the poor are given the opium continuously, that you are poor because of your past evil acts. It has nothing to do with the capitalist people. They have money because they did good deeds in the past. Now, do you want Shankaracharyas from India to be imported in Soviet Union. They will teach reincarnation, they will teach that you are poor because of your past actions. It has nothing to do with the capitalist. And the capitalist is capitalist because he has done good deeds in the past. It is a reward from God. Please tell Gorbachev from me that allow everything, but don't allow Christianity again. Christianity will bring homosexuality, it will bring sodomy, it will bring bestiality, it will bring AIDS positive to Soviet Union. Are you opening the door for all this? Be careful and very alert. It has taken 70 years to save a communist country against the whole world. Don't take any risk. Opening the door is good, but be on guard that the Pope, the Polak, does not enter in Russia. And Christianity has no revival in Russia. Communism can be at ease with Zen, because Zen has nothing to do with your social structure. Zen has nothing to do with your poverty or with your richness. Zen has nothing to do with outside world. Zen is a science to explore the inner. Invite Zen masters, Zen mystics. That will be inviting health and wholeness. A man who believes only in the body is half. And a man who believes only in the spirit is also half. I have called Gautam Buddha only half, because he denies the body. He renounces the body. I am not in absolute favor of Gautam Buddha. Only 50%. And that is my situation with Karl Marx also. I am in agreement only with 50%. His acceptance of the body is good, but his denial of the spirit is wrong. Buddha and Marx have to join hands. That is my revolution. Bring Buddha and Marx both together, hand in hand, dancing in the Soviet Union. If you cannot find Gautam Buddha and Marx, because both are dead, I can bring my 10,000 Buddhas. You see, all around these people are living a whole life of the body, of the soul, in absolute synchronicity. I can bring all my 10,000 Buddhas to reach to every nook and corner of Soviet Union. And these are not the only people with me. There are 2 million people around the earth. If you have real opening, I can bring even 2 million people to the Soviet Union to bring a new revolution, a fresh revolution, which will make Soviet citizen a complete citizen, body and soul together. We have to live outside and we have to live inside in deep balance, in harmony. This man Rigardi must have been a hocus pocus. At least I hope that he does not become a Rajneesh. He can have reincarnation, whatever he wants. He can become a buffalo, he can become a donkey. There are so many species available. Just please, don't think about me. If you had courage, then at the moment of death you talked about me. In your whole life you never talked about me. Such chickens. Talking about occultism, spiritualism. I have been here. He could have come. I could have turned him into a meditator. And if your meditation starts blossoming, you will not have any other birth in the body. You will simply disappear like incense disappearing into the blue sky, or fragrance of roses disappearing into the blue sky. You will become part of the cosmos. And as far as I am concerned, unless you are a meditator, you cannot be truly a communist. Because as far as body is concerned, no two persons are exactly equal. In their talents, in their intelligence, in their body, physical strength, no two persons are equal as far as body is concerned. You can give equal opportunity for growth, but the growth will bring unequal persons. Somebody will become a scientist and somebody will become a shoemaker. And somebody will become a great novelist like Tolstoy or Turgenev or Chekhov or Dostoevsky or Gorky. And somebody may become just a flutist. Everybody needs equal opportunity to grow unequal. But as far as spirituality is concerned, everybody can be equally a Buddha. That is true communism. Deeper, higher, more authentic. And if we can create a situation, an education for people to understand their inner being, they will come with great compassion, with love for every being. They will have a tremendous reverence for life they cannot exploit. In fact, spiritual communism should be the first. Then only the economic communism can follow it as a shadow. Just tell Comrade Gorbachev, I am ready to come any moment, just gather courage. Because I am not in absolute agreement. Marx is now old-fashioned. And I don't know any communist ever reads Das Kapital. It gathers dust just like Holy Bible. I have never come across any communist in India who has read Das Kapital. It is complicated. It is old. It is out of date. But in its own time, it was a great phenomenon. But time goes on changing. Now neither Engels, nor Lenin, nor Stalin are relevant. They were very relevant in their own time. Now Gorbachev can open the doors because Lenin kept it, Stalin kept it closed for 70 years to protect communism. Now communism is strong enough to open the doors. But be careful, don't open the doors to old diseases. They are just lurking by the side and very anxious to enter in. Mohammedan priests, because you have too many Mohammedan countries in Soviet Union, are ready to go in, and that is a third-rate religion. Christians are very anxious. It is also not worth to be called a religion, just an old cult. I suggest there is only religiousness which has come as a crossbreed between Buddha and Laozi. And the crossbreed is always better than both the parents. That crossbreed is Zen. Its Sanskrit name is Dhyan. Its Pali name, which Buddha used, is Zan. When it reached China with Bodhidharma, it became Chan. When it reached Japan with Rinzai, it became Zen. Now I am bringing it back to the land of Buddha. The circle is going to be complete. It went out of India because of the Brahmin priests. You will be surprised to know, for 2000 years, India has no Buddhists. And at the time of Buddha, almost the whole country was impressed by the man. But what happened? The moment Buddha died, he was against caste system, he was against the rituals of the Brahmins, he was against exploitation by the priesthood. The moment he died, the whole priesthood started killing Buddhists, burning them alive, destroying their scriptures. Those who could save themselves rushed all over Asia, to Tibet, to Ladakh, to Nepal, to Thailand, to China, to Korea, to Taiwan, to Japan, to Sri Lanka. The whole Asia became Buddhist except India. This is a strange phenomenon. Buddha was born here. Here he used to teach meditation, and this country simply rejected. Beware. Don't allow any priests of any religion in Soviet Union if you want to save communism. Otherwise, these priests will prove just like a cancer. They will destroy the whole communism, and they will bring all old rotten ideologies back into people's minds. Beware of so-called religions. This is my message to the Soviet people. I love them. I would love to bring meditation into their life, because meditation brings grace, peace, silence, blissfulness, a freedom which nobody can take away from you. The new series begins today. Zen fire, Zen wind. Our beloved master Yakusan asked a monk Where do you come from? From Nansen. Nansen was one of the great masters of Zen. His reply that he is coming from Nansen, Yaku-san immediately asked, how long were you there? From last winter to summer, replied the monk. Then you must have become a good ox, commented Yaku-san. I have to tell you about the ox. I have told you about it. In ancient China, there used to be 10 cars about ox herding, mastering the ox. Those were 10 beautiful pictures. In the first picture, the ox has escaped from its owner into the deep forest. The owner is looking all around, but he can see only trees and trees and trees and no ox. In the second picture, he finds the footprints of the ox. Now there is some hope. He may find the ox. He follows the footprints. In the third picture, he finds the ox is hiding behind a bush. Just his tail and the back side he can see. But he is immediately happy that he is trying to deceive me. In the fourth picture, he has seen the whole ox. In the fifth picture, he takes hold of the ox with the horns. It is a difficult struggle. The ox is far more powerful an animal than man. With difficulty, he manages. In the sixth picture, he is riding on the ox. In the seventh, he is moving towards the home. In the eighth, he is put the horse ox in its stable. In the ninth picture, he is sitting before his cottage playing a flute. When these pictures came to Japan, the tenth picture was dropped out, thinking that it may be dangerous, particularly for people who are very new and they don't know the whole world of Zen. The tenth picture was, the man is so happy, he takes a bottle of wine and rushes towards the marketplace, perhaps towards the pub, to enjoy with his friends. He has found his ox, now this is a celebration. Being afraid that this will mean that you can drink wine, this will go against Buddha. They dropped out of fear the tenth picture. But I love the tenth picture because it does not represent wine. Wine is only a symbol of being drunk with the divine. Wine is only a symbol of being utterly at ease with existence, relaxed, in tune, in harmony, in accord. And his rushing towards the pub is also symbolic. It is rushing towards your own juices of life to the very center of your being, where you will get drunk. And this kind of getting drunk is unending. Once you have tasted it, you have tasted it. It is not going to fade away. it is going to overwhelm your whole life. Your whole life will become a festival of lights. Your whole life will become a ceremony of laughter, of dance, of song, of music. This tenth picture was dropped out of fear. But I want to bring that tenth picture back even to Japan. Ishida is here sitting. She has come from Japan, from a Shinto temple. I will make her my ambassador into Japan. I have my ambassadors all over the world. Soon I will appoint an ambassador into Soviet Union. I would like to tell Ishida that the tenth picture have to be added to the nine pictures because those nine pictures are incomplete. This is the story of the ox. So when Yaku-san said, then you must have become a good ox, the monk said, the thing is, I was there, but I did not even go to the dining hall. But you cannot get by just through breathing the wind. Yaku-san commented, it was not that bad, Osho. Osho is a very beautiful word. It should be added to every language. Just the sound is beautiful in the first place, Osho. It shows respect, it shows love, it shows gratitude. It is not just a dry word like reverence. It is a very loving and friendly word, almost having the sense of the beloved. The man said, it was not that bad, Osho. Yaku-san was also a great master. There is surely a man who will hold a spoon for me. Zen talks in symbols. That's why it has remained a very small stream of great mystics. But it has never become a mass phenomenon. Perhaps it is good that it never became a mass phenomenon. Everything that becomes a mass phenomenon becomes degraded. Because the majority of the people consist of idiots. And every second, one idiot is born in the world. They go on increasing. When I was in America, I just made a comment to a television interview that all Oregonians where I was are retarded people. Obviously, Oregonians were very furious, particularly the Attorney General of Oregon, from Myers. And the governor and all the politicians were absolutely angry that I have called the whole Oregon retarded. But the University of Oregon took the case in hand and they surveyed all cross sections of Oregon society and they surveyed my commune. And their results silenced the governor, the attorney general, and all the politicians. The results were that the average mental age of Oregonians is 7. That is the age of retarded persons. And the age of the commune people is 14, double than the Aragonians. But the idiots destroyed the most intelligent commune in the world. It has great surgeons, doctors, professors, everybody was almost a postgraduate in some subject. Hundreds were PhDs, hundreds were D-Lits. It was absolutely and utterly intelligent group of people. Zen has remained a small, thin line, but immensely rich. It deals in symbols. If you don't understand the symbols, the story is meaningless. What is the symbol? When the monk said it was not that bad also, don't think that I was hungry because I never went into the kitchen. There was a man always who will hold a spoon for me. That was nonsense. Who was my nourishment? Seeing that I will not enter in the dining hall, he was always, the master was always bringing food for me. Not only physical food, he was also my nourishment spiritually. Holding a spoon for me means nourishment. There was someone who took care of me, my master Nansen. I simply waited outside the dining room just to see whether the master takes care of everybody, whether he will look out of the window and see one monk is standing outside, not coming in. So it was not so bad that I was hungry and starving. But Nansen was always holding nourishment for me out of the window. And it was not only nourishment for my body, it was also nourishment. His attention, his care for me, I am nobody. And he took so much care, every day he remembered me that he will be standing outside. Leaving his dining table, he will come and give me food. And he never asked, why you go on standing outside? Because that is one of the fundamentals of Zen, don't interfere into anybody's life. Everybody has a territorial imperative, a certain area, don't enter into it. That is his dignity, that is his pride. Leave it to his intelligence. And he was not only giving me food, he was giving me spiritual nourishment. It was not bad. Also, don't misunderstand me and don't misunderstand my master Nansen. On another occasion, Yaku-san was returning to his temple with a bundle of firewood when a monk asked him, where have you been? Yaku-san replied, I have got firewood. The monk pointed to Yaku-san's sword and said, it makes the sound tap, tap. Perhaps because he was carrying the firewood and the sword was hanging around his waist and it may be hitting the firewood and making the sound tap, tap. He said, what is that? That makes the sound tap, tap. At this, the master unsheathed the sword and assumed a warrior's stance. He stood like a warrior. What Yaku-san is intending to show to the monk? First, the monk has asked, "Where have you been?" He has not answered that. Because what is past is past, and what is future. They are not the concern of Zen. The concern of Zen is the present moment. You can ask the question about the past, but you cannot distract the master from the present. So he did not answer where he has been. On the contrary, he simply said, "I have got firewood." Just in the present, right now you can see the firewood and you can understand where I would have been collecting firewood. But that has not to be said. That is a past thing. I simply show you the present. And the present implies the past. And in a subtle way, it implies the future. But nothing can be said about that. That which is gone, is gone. And that which has not come yet, has not come yet. We can live only in the present moment. That is our only time. One never knows what is going to happen in the next moment. Just 3 days before, a Canadian sannyasin who had been here only for 3 days was meditating, and he has expressed the desire before meditating that I want to become a sannyasin this evening. And while meditating, he died. The evening never came. People thought for 2.5 hours that he is meditating. But when he did not move at all, somebody shook him and found that he is dead. But as far as I am concerned, because he was intending to become a sannyasin in the evening, it is enough. He has become the sannyasin. Sannyas is not something outward. It is something that arises in you, an urge, a deep longing. And he died in meditation. What better initiation there can be? He died as a sannyasin, in utter silence, in absolute peace. He disappeared into the beyond. Zen does not talk about past and future. Its whole concentration is in the now and here. I always love to tell a small story. A great atheist advocate has written in his sitting room on the wall in capital letters, "God exists nowhere." Of course, everybody who came to see him had to read it. It was such big letters just in front. His first child was born. And one day, he was playing with the child. He was learning the language slowly. So he started reading the sentence on the wall. He could read, "There is God nowhere." But nowhere was such a big word, the child could not manage to read it in one go. He cut it in two. He read, "God is now here." Nowhere has been cut into two pieces. For the first time, the father looked at the sentence and he said, "My God, this child has made me aware. Now I can never read that sentence completely. Always I will remember now here." It was a moment of transformation for their hoping. For the first time he started thinking, "Do I know really that God is nowhere? Have I explored the whole space? Have I explored my inner being?" Just as the theists are blind, so are the atheists. Both are believers. The only right person is an agnostic, who is neither theist nor atheist, who is simply in search of the truth. He has no belief system, no prejudice, no ideology already programmed. I don't see much difference in the atheism of Soviet Union and the theism of the Vatican. The theism of the Vatican is based on a belief. Das Kapital is the Bible for the Soviet Union. Because Marx says there is no God, it has become a program for every child. In 70 years, the old generation has disappeared. Now every child believes there is no God. In India, every child believes there is God. Both are beliefs. One is positive belief, one is negative belief. But belief is belief. Neither Soviet Union knows, nor Vatican. The people who know, they say it is impossible to say anything about the ultimate reality. It cannot be brought into language. It remains mysterious. You can enter into it, but you cannot say anything about it. You can enjoy it. You can rejoice it. You can dance it. But language is too poor. This is real poverty of philosophy. That it cannot express the ultimate experience of meditators. Only the agnostic can be a meditator. He puts aside all programming, whether the programming is from the theist or from the atheist, it does not matter. All programming, the whole mind has to be put aside, and you have to enter into a space of no mind. In that no mind, there is no time, just the present moment and utter silence and great clarity. And you are a luminous being. Now, here, that's why Yaku-san said, "I have got firewood." Anything else you can understand. But don't ask me about the past. The monk then pointed to Yaku-san's sword and said, "It makes the sound tap, tap. What in the world is it? Have you ever thought about even smaller things cannot be defined? If somebody asks you, what is yellow, what you will do? You can point to the color yellow, but you cannot give any definition. What is yellow? What is red? You will say red is red, but that is not giving the answer. This is tautology. You are simply repeating, a rose is a rose is a rose, but you have gone nowhere. You have not defined what is rose. You can only indicate this is. No definition is possible. Only indication. So when the man asks, what is that which is making the sound tap, tap? The master did not answer that it is a sword. Because Zen does not believe in language. It believes in existence. He took out the sword and showed the man a warrior's stance, the way the warrior stands with his sword. This is it. If you have eyes, you can see. If you don't have eyes, I am helpless. But no dialogue. Just existential indications. Shiro wrote, in snow white mist, where sea and sky are one, a single disk of red, the rising sun. Haikus are pictures. Visualize them. They are not poetries in the ordinary sense. Just visualize in snow white mist, where sea and sky are one, a single disk of red, the rising sun. These haikus have come out of meditation. Perhaps Shiro was meditating by the seaside. And as he opened his eyes, in snow white mist, where sea and sky are one on the horizon, suddenly a single disk of red, the rising sun, and utter silence on his path. He is no more there. He is completely absorbed in the ocean, in the mist, in the rising sun. It happened to Picasso. It will help you to understand. He was painting. One man was watching continuously for 1.5 hours. Finally, he could not resist temptation because he could not understand what he was painting. Just colors, colors, but no idea what he is painting. Finally, he shook Picasso and asked, what are you painting? As if from a trance, he was awakened. He said, what? I was not there. Just the painting was happening. I was not painting. I don't know what. When the painting is complete, the critics will find out what I have painted, because I am not. I am simply my brush, my colors, my canvas. Something is happening, something is cooking, but I don't know exactly. A rich young woman, very super rich, asked him that you have never made any portrait. He has never made any portrait because who will ask him to make a portrait? Just look at his paintings. He said, I have never done any portrait. The woman said, I am willing to pay any amount of money. Don't bother about money. Money does not matter. She was a widow of a super rich American. Picasso, just to avoid the woman, said it will cost $1 million. She said, agreed, start. He started painting her portrait. When the portrait was complete, the woman was completely in amazement. She said just one question, where is my nose in this portrait? Because from the nose I can find out where my eyes are, where my mouth is, where my ears are. A central point, just one question, I will not ask anything more. Picasso said, I have told you before, I don't do portraits. I knew perfectly well where it was, but now I don't know. I was so lost in painting it. Who cares about your nose? You can take it to the critics, art connoisseurs, show them, perhaps they can find. When a meditator is in deep meditation, he is no more. And the morning, early morning, when it is still dark and the sun is still under the horizon, is the best time, the most cool. And if you are near the sea, the cool, crisp, salty breeze and the silence surrounding you and the continuous sound of the waves creating a certain vibration of music. It works almost like a lullaby. Just as your mother moves you in her hands and sings a song, continuous waves making the same sound again and again and again, it creates a lullaby. It helps you to relax. Now people are using that sound for sleep. Shiro must be sitting on the sea beach, utterly relaxed. And then he opened his eyes, clean and clear, just like mirrors, and there is a reflection. The mist meeting the sea, and suddenly out of the mist and out of the sea rises a red disc, the rising sun. These haikus are word pictures. The necessity of a meditative mind as a background is absolute. No one except a meditator can write haiku. Now many Westerners are writing haiku. They don't understand that without meditation, you cannot write a haiku. You can compose a poem. You know how many letters are in a haiku. You can compose, but that composition is from the mind, and a haiku is from the no mind, from the utter silence, when you are nothing but a mirror, not out of thought, but from no thought. Manisa has asked a question. Our beloved master, is not the urge to understand actually the urge to become one, both inwardly and with our outer world? Yes, Manisa. It is a very complicated question that you have asked. It looks simple. I have to bring Sigmund Freud in. It was Sigmund Freud, the first man in the world, who said that the whole urge for finding the truth, liberation, salvation, is nothing but out of a deprivation. The child lived in mother's womb for 9 months, one with the mother. That was his whole world, his whole cosmos. He knew nothing else. The womb was the whole universe. And it was so beautiful, so relaxed. He had no worries of going bankrupt. He had no worries about the wife and the children becoming hippies. He had no worries at all. All nourishment was given by mother. All oxygen was given by mother. Everything was supplied without asking. He had lived for 9 months in paradise. But after 9 months, he is thrown out of paradise, just the way Adam and Eve were thrown out of the Garden of Eden. Then he encounters the whole world, such a helpless child. And the world is too big. And every day new problems. Every day he has to learn new things. Problem upon problem. Soon he will be going to the school, and there are so many subjects. Soon he will be getting married, and there are so many troubles. Soon he will be in business or in service, and all kinds of masks he will have to wear before the wife, before the girlfriend, before the boss, before the servant. He will have to change his mask continuously. A tremendous desire is to go back to the womb. According to Sigmund Freud, and I agree with him, the desire to know the truth, the desire to be liberated, the desire to become one with the existence, is an extension of the experience in the womb of the mother. The whole cosmos becomes our womb. The moment you enter in deep meditation, at the very center of your being, you are connected with the cosmos. Otherwise, you cannot live even for a single moment. Your life is not your life. It is the life that cosmos is pouring in you continuously. Your breath is not your breath. It is the cosmos that is continuously pouring oxygen in exact proportion that is needed by you. If it was left to you to breathe, I don't think anybody would survive. You will forget. Somebody insults you, and you will forget breathing. First things first. You see a beautiful woman, and you will forget that the heart has to continue beating. It stops. It will be so difficult. Existence has taken care of every essential thing to keep in its own hands. What is given to you is trivia. All essential things that are absolutely necessary for life are still in the hands of existence. When you reach in deep meditation to your roots, you will find that a door opens into the beyond. And you know, every moment life is rushing in you. The more you become open, at the center, more life you have. Abundance of life. So much that you would like to share with the whole world. Still, it is inexhaustible. Yes, Manisha, the desire, the urge to understand is really the urge to become one with the cosmos. Then there is no birth, then there is no death. The cosmos is eternal. It has never been created, as Christians have been telling you, and other religions also. It is evolving from eternity to eternity. I am against America, Christianity. I am against President Ronald Reagan, not for personal hurts that they have done to me and to my commune. I am against because Ronald Reagan did a tremendous wound into the whole intelligentsia of the world by burning Charles Darwin's all books in every library, in every college, in every school, in every university, because it teaches evolution. And Christianity teaches creation. These are two contradictory concepts. Creation means once forever complete. Evolution means never complete. Always going on and on, always the goal is just nearby, but as you move on, the goal also moves on. It is just like the horizon. It looks just few miles away. You drive. As you drive, the horizon goes on moving further and further. The distance between you and the horizon will remain exactly the same. You can go around the earth because the horizon is just an illusion. The goal, every goal is an illusion. The man of understanding lives without any goal. He simply loves to live. He simply loves to love. He simply loves to sing and dance and enjoy the moment, the opportunity that existence has given to you. And in that total dance, you become one. In that total singing, when the singer disappears, you become one. I have told about you, about Nijinsky to you, one of the greatest dancers the world has ever known. His greatness was not just his dance. His greatness was that once in a while dancing, he will jump so high, which is not possible according to scientists, because gravitation is pulling you down. There is a limit. But he always transcended the limit too much. That was a miracle. What happens? What happens to gravitation? And not only this, when he will come back down, gravitation pulls with force. You will fall down on the stage with a thump. But Nijinsky will fall down like a feather, just slowly moving. That too is against gravitation. And he was asked again and again, what is the secret? He said, the secret I don't know. All that I know, whenever I try to do it, I never succeed. In my aloneness, I try to do it, I never succeed. When I forget myself completely in the dance, when there is no Nijinsky, only the dance, suddenly it happens. It is a surprise to you, it is a surprise to me. It is not my doing. Meditation is not your doing. You simply make the effort, but it is not your doing. Your effort is needed to prepare the ground. As the ground is ready, immediately you see you are no more there. The whole cosmos is. You have entered a greater womb, an eternal womb of tremendous peace and ecstasy. Now, it is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Where is Sardar? Absent? Perhaps in deep meditation. That old dried up prune, Mother Teresa, invites that old rotten fruitcake, Pope the Polar, to come and visit her. Bleeding Hearts, Home for the Dead and Dying, in Calcutta. The Pollock is thrilled to receive the invitation. So he gets Cardinal Cat's ass to pack their bags and they fly off to India. Their first day is spent touring Mother Teresa's Bleeding Hearts home, blessing all the half-dead Christian converts. The next morning, the two Catholic cowboys from Rome go out into the streets of Calcutta to wave at the crowds of starving Hindus. But all day long, Pope the Pollock has been acting very strangely. Cardinal Cat's ass is worried about the old Pollock and asks him, "Your Holiness, what is the matter?" "Listen," says the old fruitcake, "as soon as we get back to that Bleeding Hearts home, the first thing I want to do is rip off Mother Teresa's knickers." "Really?" replies the shocked cardinal. "Why do you want to do that?" "Because," says the Pope with a groan, "they are much too tight for me." "How much for a roast beef sandwich?" asked little Finny Finkelstein, standing in Chicken Chopper sandwich shop. $2, replies Chicken Chopper from behind the corner. "How much for a cheese sandwich?" asked the little Jew. $1, replies Chicken. "What about a ham sandwich?" asks Finny. But before Chicken Chopper can reply, there is a loud clap of thunder in the sky overhead. Finny Finkelstein falls to his knees, looks up at the sky and prays out loud, "Okay, okay, I was only asking." Dimel Himmel, a nice Jewish boy from Berlin, goes to live in America to make his fortune and ends up in LA, California. After a few years, he comes back to Berlin to visit his old mother. Mrs. Hetty Himmel. He walks through the door in his stone vast Levi jeans. Alligator tennis shirt and Reebok sneakers. I wait, cries Mama Himmel. But where are your beautiful long whiskers? Ah, Mama, replies Dimmel, nobody wears a beard in LA. Ah, my boy, my baby, cries Hetty Himmel, but tell me, you have at least been keeping the Sabbath. Look, Mama, says Himmel, business is business. In America, people work on Sabbath. Ah, God, cries Mama Himmel, but kosher food, you still eat? Listen, Mama, replies Himmel, I am an American now. It is very difficult to keep kosher in America. The old lady looks at her son in shock. She hesitates for a moment and then goes up to him and whispers, Dimmel, my son, tell me one thing. Are you still circumcised? Nivedana. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards. With your whole life energy, rush towards the center of your being. Your total consciousness is needed to become just an arrow, forcing itself deeper and deeper, faster and faster, with an urgency as if this is going to be your last moment on the earth. Without this urgency, you will never be able to reach to the center of your being. That is the point from where you are connected with the cosmos. And that is also the point which transforms you into a Buddha, into an awakened one. That is also the point when you learn you are immortal. You have been here always, and you will be here always, whether in body or no body. As you are coming closer and closer to your being, a great silence descends over you, and a great peace arises within your being. The moment you reach to the very center, you are no more. The Buddha is. the only quality that Buddha has is pure awareness, consciousness, witnessing. Witnessing is a key word for all meditators. Witness that you are not the body. Witness that you are not the mind. Witness that you are only a witness. Suddenly, great bliss arises in you. Out of nowhere, flowers of invisible ecstasy start showering on you. You are at the very source of your life juices. To make the witnessing clear, Nivedana, relax, let go, but keep on witnessing. That is the only thing you have to remember. You are a witness, and everything else will happen on its own. I can see 10,000 Buddhas utterly relaxed in their center. Gautam the Buddha auditorium is changing into an ocean of consciousness, because you are all melting, dissolving your separation from existence. The ocean of consciousness is without any waves, without any ripples. It is utterly calm and quiet. This moment, you are the most blessed people on the earth, because everybody is concerned only with the trivia, money, prestige, power. Nobody seems to be concerned to know themselves, and nobody seems to be concerned to know their eternity. This moment, now and here, you are experiencing the most intimate, the most ultimate experience that is possible to man. This experience is going to become your Zen fire, Zen wind. The fire will burn everything that is false in you, and the wind will take away all that is only a personality. Out of this fire and wind will arise your pure gold, you will need to understand the transformation that happens in this moment. You have lived your whole life horizontally, in a line, from the cradle to the graveyard. In meditation, the transformation happens. You are no more a horizontal line, you become vertical. You reach to the highest peak of your consciousness, and you reach to the deepest point of your consciousness. The height and the depth reveal you your godliness. There is no God, but there is certainly a quality I call godliness. It comprises compassion, love, friendship, joy, creativity. It brings you new songs. It brings you new dances. It brings you the truth and the immersion of you into the truth. Collect as much experience you can collect, because you have to bring it with you. It has to become part of your day-to-day routine life. Chopping wood, you should be as silent as you are now. Drawing water from the well, you should be as blissful and ecstatic as you are now. Sitting silently, doing nothing, you should be as blissful as you are now. And persuade the Buddha, which is your eternal nature, to come along with you. First, the Buddha will come as a shadow to you, following you. But even that shadow will bring great grace and abundance of life. Great benediction you can shower all over the world. But this is only the beginning. Buddha as a shadow. Soon, Buddha will be ahead of you and you will become the shadow. That is the second step. And the third step, you merge into the Buddha. Even the shadow disappears. Only Buddha is. Only pure awareness is. You have entered into the cosmic womb. Nivedana, come back, but come as a Buddha, with the same grace, with the same silence, with the same bliss. Sit down for a few moments, just to recollect the golden path that you have followed, and feel the presence of Buddha is just behind you. And remember, in every activity, however ordinary, the Buddha is present behind you. His presence transforms every ordinary action into an extraordinary act. Every word becomes so rich and so full of poetry, so full of truth, so full of silence. Every silence is as deep as the Pacific Ocean. Every moment in your life, you are just moving upward in consciousness, as if you are moving on the greatest peak of the Himalaya, the Everest. I teach you this fire of Zen. I teach you this wind of Zen that is going to burn everything that is wrong, that is going to take away everything that is wrong in you and leave only the truth. The ultimate truth. That ultimate truth brings freedom. This is the only spirituality, the only religion. It is individual, it has nothing to do with any church, with any organized religion, It has nothing to do with any scripture. It has to do only with your inner search and finding your authentic nature, what Zen people call the original face. The Buddha is your original face. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, beloved Master.